If you eat, sleep, and breathe golf...
Sounds like my kind of guy.
Love to explore...
All right, here's what you do. You're going to call your PR guy on the phone, tell him I'm here to see him.
And most importantly, just want to have some fun...
Looks like we got ourselves an orgy here.
Welcome to Talking Golf Getaways with Mitch and Darren.
Don't you think this is starting to get just a little big for the two of us to handle?
Here's the guy with all the questions, Mitch Lawrence.
I don't know how much you know about journalism, but... First rule of thumb is don't ever ask a question that you don't want an answer to.
And the guy with all the answers, Darren Bunch.
Not his fault. He's just trying not to lose his job.
Hello and welcome once again to Talking Golf Getaways. We're glad you found us wherever you consume your podcasts, Apple, Audio Boom, or as always on the Golf Trip Experts website at golftripx.com. He is Darren Bunch out there in California. You can find him at Golf Getaways. On Twitter and Instagram, you can find me at Mitch Lawrence on those same social medias. And by now, you know, you can find the newest member of the Talking Golf Getaways Golf Newsnet team, our highly esteemed, decorated co-producer extraordinaire, Chris McEwen, on every social media platform, at Chris McEwen. You can check out his great podcast, Golf Origin Stories, and his other media empire website at drivingrangeheroes.com. He is indeed building to something supernatural in the world of online content creation. We're lucky we have him for a little while today. Yo, Darren, you know, I was going to say my usual hey, D, to you, but then I realized I can't because our guest today, the great Darrell Billy, known to social media aficionados as Billy Bogey, is also D. And I can't call you DB because he is also DB.
But you could call him DB and call him, I mean, you could call me DB, you could call him BB for Billy Bogey.
Hey, hey.
That ain't happening. That ain't happening. I thought you were going to say you could call you DB1 and him DB2, and that ain't happening either. If anything, I would call Darrell DB1 and you DB2.
I'm totally okay with that.
All right. I figured you would be. So I'm just going to say, hey, Darren, good day, sir. How you doing?
I am doing well. I'm looking forward to the conversation today with Darrell. He and I played golf on a drizzly day at the home course in Washington many, many years ago. He got to witness the thrashing of our friend Joe Sass. That was on a podcast we talked about with my buddy Joe, where we did a two-week-long match, and the turning point of the match was the day we played with Darrell. So it is a fond memory for me. Not so fond a memory for Joe when he listens to this, I'm sure. It's good to be talking again with Darrell, too, because he is one of the most stylish golfers I have ever teed it up with. I mean, this guy knows how to wear some clothes.
So. Yes, among other things.
Yes, exactly.
We're actually going to talk about the clothing aspect of Darrell's life.
Well, that's good.
I wear... nice hickory style clothes when I play, but I think
do you
hey, with that said, hey Mitch, you can call Darren DB1.
No, that's an emphatic no. What I was going to say is the clothing part is not just about wearing nice clothes, which we know Darrell does and is very capable of doing. But it also ties into kind of a bigger part of who Darrell is and why he is doing some of the things that he's doing. So take a seat, Darren.
All right. Well, we'll get to that in a minute. First, as we've done before, and I'm going to do this kind of solo today, the best thing I saw this week, just so we get into it, is I went to the Roseburg course, which is still does not have a name, but is dialing in a name that should be announced here in April. I played Dan Hixon's first 10 holes there in Roseburg, Oregon, and I have to say they're fantastic. And I'm not saying that just because I'm part of the project. Yeah, I play a lot of golf, 500-plus golf courses. Dan has built some super fun holes around these ponds and in the mine, and I'm just telling you, people will really want to get there to play. It's a particular interest to Jarrell even because he's a Pacific Northwest golfer. He can get down to Roseburg, Oregon somewhat easily. So I just want people, you should be following at Name Our Course on Twitter and Instagram. I've been putting up photos, put up some cool drone shots that I got before I crashed my drone into a tree. So that was a good thing. So check it out. It's just going to be a fun golf course. Preview play starting in July, and we're working out all the details. You'll see on social media, I've been asking a lot of questions about how we should shape that preview play. So that will be great. Also, a couple other plugs. If you are a traveler, we've got a plug for the Gamble Sands Wine Valley trip way out in August, August 29th to September 1st. We've got 7 rooms remaining at Gamble in that thing. So we've already sold some spots. If you're interested, reach out to me on social media and I will get you the details. And then coming up much quicker, May 9th through 12th, at French Lick, Indiana. Boy, that's harder to say than I expected.
only for you, Darren.
You got to get in touch with Ryan Ballingy on Twitter or head over to thegolfnewsnet.com and search for French Lick to get more info. I will be there. Mitch will be there. Mitch's brother, Matthew, will be there. So if you've drunk too much while you're playing, you will not be able to tell the two of them apart. It's very possible that our own Chris McEwen may be joining us as well. So it's going to be a fun time. And of course, Ryan's going to be there. And I believe he's working on it as well. Brian Orr, golf photographer extraordinaire, will also be joining us. So that's going to be a fun time. And to the best of my knowledge, there are still 2 or 3 spots available. So reach out and get on that trip. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yep, going to be a blast. And I love the fact that we're actually talking about traveling again.
This is
a wonderful thing. I've already booked my flight for the French Lick trip. I'm fully vaccinated. I have no fear. I'm going to get there, and I literally can't wait. It's been so long since we've been on planes and traveling around. Not all of us drive 180 hours in a day to get somewhere, Darren, like you do.
Well, I'm not doing that this trip. I mean, I'm going to I'm going to do a lot of driving because I'm going to fly into Atlanta. And then I'm going to go see you in South Carolina. I'm going to go up to North Carolina and spend a week at Tobacco Road. Then I'm going to go to French Lick. French Lick. Why can't I say French Lick? And then I'm going to circle back down toward Georgia. I might hit Sweetens Cove for an afternoon. And I'm going to finish the trip at the Macklemore, which we have spoken of frequently here on the podcast. I will get to see it in person. Hopefully Brian's going to go down there with me too. And we will have dueling drones and see if we can crash all 4 of our drones on the same day into various trees atop Lookout Mountain.
That's so nice. And I'm staying anywhere away from you with a drone. That's the only thing I know for sure.
That is probably a good practice.
Yeah. All right. We've waited long enough to get Darrell into this conversation. I know he's been biting his lip and going, okay, I want in. Most of us by now have become friendly with people on social media who we've never actually met. This has become a very common occurrence. Some of our best friends, theoretically, people we know we'd love to be around, fall into that category. We follow them. They follow us. We have common passionate interests around the game. They intrigue us. They make us laugh, think. We admire them for their positivity and insight, the joy they give us on a regular, albeit cyber, basis. And that is how it is with Darrell Billy for me and a ton of others, I have to admit. Darrell's a man of the world, not only in spirit, but in fact. Born in New Orleans, raised in an Air Force family with 23 different addresses at last count, including Amsterdam. Growing up, he finally made the Pacific Northwest his home. Now living in, and Darrell, you got to help me here. How's it pronounced?
Puyallup.
Puyallup. Get out of here.
Puyallup, Washington.
But it's spelled P-U-Y-A-L-L-U-P, yes?
Yes, it is.
And it's pronounced?
Puyallup.
There's a W in there that I'm not seeing, but that's
it. It might be the way I'm pronouncing it, buddy.
I thought reading it, because I live in the South, it's spelled P-U-Y-A-L-L-up, and I thought it was Puyallup.
Yeah.
But it's not. Okay. So there in the, let's just say the Seattle-Tacoma area, we'll talk about his history in the game, his love of Hickory golf, why the year 2013 was so important to him, his favorite Pacific Northwest courses and vibe, his enormous and continuing efforts to expand the game, not only among longtime gamers, but new players, as the founder of the AP National Golf Club, that's the Atlantic Pacific National Golf Club, as a board member of Washington Golf and as a big force for the annual National Hickory Golf Day. This year it's happening on May 2nd. It's a wonderful, beautiful thing in the game. His Instagram and Facebook accounts, at Billy Bogey, and we'll ask him about that, draw wonderful attention to a truly unique, funny, thoughtful, creative man, one who seeks to raise the level of interaction for us all by a constant reminder of the importance in his life of family, friends met and unmet, and of course, the greatest game ever invented, golf. Side note for all of you listening, go to his Instagram account, get into the Bogey Chronicles, reflections on the game that are incredibly fun, on point, and unlike anything else you'll find. At the end of every Bogey Chronicle, Billy Bogey says, cool people play golf. And I'm pretty sure the coolest guy I know, with apologies to Darren and Chris, is Darrell Billy. Welcome to Talking Golf Getaways, my friend.
Oh, my goodness, my man. That is one hell of an introduction. Thank you so much. I'm extremely humbled.
That's, you deserve nothing less.
That's holy sure. smokes. Holy smokes. Thank you.
All right. Before we get to anything.
Sure.
And I mentioned it right off the bat. I have seen, and anybody who knows you on the socials has seen your beautiful swing. Your swing that is worthy of envy and emulation. I've tried. I can't do it. Why Billy Bogey? Why not Billy Birdie? It's the one question I always had.
Bogey just sounded better, and I make a lot of them on the golf course. So it just works, pal. It just went with me. I don't make any birdies. I probably make a birdie one out of every five rounds, to be honest with you. And those videos are 15 seconds, buddy. So there's a lot of carnage. Afterwards, you should see the stuff that hits the cutting room floor.
Wait, so you're telling me you're selective about the video clips?
I can't confirm or deny, but...
Have you seen Darren's latest viral video that's had a million views of him in a bunker?
Everybody's seen that.
Have you not seen that? Darren, one of the great things about Darren to me is his willingness to put that up there and let people just completely drag him. Just for hours on end and just laugh about it.
But that's awesome. That's authentic. That's the beautiful part of Darren. DV just puts it out there and lets it ride. We all need that. We can take notes from that, man.
Not sure what I'm putting out there, but
I'm with you.
I will say one thing, too. You mentioned Darrell's swing. He's got one of the best post-swing club twirls that I've ever seen as well. I mean, that guy can twirl a club after he's struck a shot. So somewhere I have a video of that. I need to get it out.
The funny thing is, I can twirl a club. Once that shot's gone, I can twirl it.
You just don't look as good doing it.
No, of course. Well, that goes without saying.
One good shot, one twirl. That's all I practice.
All right. Smart.
But we gotta go back. Can we go back for a second? Did I hear Brian Orr, photographer extraordinaire, and then drink? Is he a drinking game now?
Yeah, well, he has been since we started doing the podcasts.
I got to get in on that. That guy, he captures some great shots, man. And if people aren't following him on Instagram, they're missing out.
No doubt about that. Yeah, every time we say Brian Orr, we are legally obligated to say golf photographer extraordinaire, which then requires people to drink. So it's a big legal process. We've been in the courts with it, and it's what we have to do.
And it doesn't require alcohol if you're not an alcohol person. If you're like Darren, you can just have a milkshake.
There you go. As long as there's drinking involved.
Yeah.
At 10:15 in the morning, I can have a milkshake, but most of the other time I would be drinking with you, I would believe. So. All right. Where are we? We've run off the tracks already on this entire podcast. Billy / Darrell / Mr. Bogey. Quick history of your game. You came to it later in life. You were hooked instantly when your friends took you to, I believe, Pacific Lutheran University golf course. Yep. You hit your first shot, which Mitch tells me was a McGregor 3-iron.
That's
over
correct.
20 years ago. You know, tell us about finding the game.
Well, that's pretty accurate. That was a very long time ago. PLU established 1926, of all things. That little nine-holer was a beast. It's not around anymore. Now it's a parking lot, unfortunately. But that was the beginning of it all for me. I played 3-4 times a week thereafter, hitting chip shots into a bucket in my backyard, tearing up my grass. I'm sure there's, you know, many golfers I want to blame it on a mole or two, but that's what I did just to get better. And again, the game just bit me. And 20 years later, I'm still playing and I'm still searching and now posting one good video of my swing in a club tour.
I just want to throw a quick follow-up in here because the thing that not only struck me about you played other sports growing up, and I think it was a bunch of basketball friends got together. And when you took that first swing on the first tee,
yep,
you didn't hit a game improvement club. You hit a McGregor 3-iron, and somehow that resonated with you.
You
had just, no idea kind of what you were doing or what you were swinging, right?
No clue, buddy. No clue at all. It was later on I realized what kind of club that was, just being a blade and not much forgiveness. Super small. It was super tiny. But obviously I didn't – that didn't resonate with me at the time. It did later upon reflection.
Right.
So – yeah, it was pretty special, and I'm glad I made contact. But shortly after that, they gave me an exploding golf ball to hit. Try this one. So, yeah.
Welcome to the game.
Welcome to the game.
All right. So as you got more and more into it, you mentioned that PLU is now a parking lot, which always makes me so sad, especially when I hear, and I'm sure Darren and Chris feel the same way, when you hear that it's a nine-hole beast. Which obviously was just great, but now is non-existent. So as you got into it after going out in your backyard and you started playing kind of area courses, what courses back then grabbed you? Why do you think you remember them years later?
Well, obviously PLU, like a lot of good golf courses, just kind of going back to that one was a little Muni University golf course. And, most people, I guess you would say that it was an afterthought golf course, but I'm saddened that I can't remember who the pro was, but they were just welcoming. So you would go there as a single, you could get out, you could play, you pay a certain price, play as much as you want. So I played a lot of golf there. So that one shaped me quite a bit. I also, you know, 2 years later or so, I brought my mother to that golf course and she got to see me play golf for the first time. And so she walked the golf course with me. So that was super special. And then I went, I learned to play at Meadow Park Golf Course, probably about 20 minutes away, built in 1915, a John Ball golf course. That one really started to whet my chops there. I learned how to just hit the ball really hard. And I hit a lot of trees, kind of like Darren's drone, unfortunately. I hit a lot of trees.
Great drag there, man.
So,
bravo.
So that was my, Meadow Park, PLU. And then there's another little nine holer called the Highlands. That was just great. I love executive nine golf courses where if you don't have a lot of time or you don't have a lot of friends, you just go there. And you're able just to scoot around and work on your game. I love the Highlands. I love PLU, Meadow Park Golf Course. They get a lot of credit for letting someone just come out as a single and play and have a good time. They're very welcoming golf courses.
So those are still there, right?
Correct. Except for the PLU. So, but yeah, Meadow Park and the Highlands are. Yep. Yep.
Good to know. Was there anything about the Pacific Northwest that we think of? I'm not talking about the coast necessarily, but when I think of Pacific Northwest courses and I think trees and, you know, are they typical? kind of, did you get into the actual environment of it all, or was the game what you were just focusing on?
Well, no, it was a combination. So I love to hike. I love to get out in the outdoors. So getting on the golf course, I just felt right at home. So if there's not trees on the golf course, it didn't feel like a golf course to me, or water. There has to be a lot of water on the golf course, not kind of, you know, not the bear trap kind of water that the guys are playing this week. But this, I love water. I love to see the ducks, the swans and eagles and the deer, the wildlife. That's super important to me. So if you're playing a traditional Northwest, Pacific Northwest golf course, if it's not tree lined, it's not a Pacific Northwest golf course.
So, Got it.
You know what Darrell will like if he likes water? He'll like the Roseburg course, the new Roseburg course, because there's like a 50-acre lake among the other ponds and whatnot out there, and there's nothing but birds everywhere. It's
love it.
It's really a cool place.
Love it. Yeah.
Let's talk about some of the courses you play now. You know, what are your favorites up there in the Northwest? If somebody was coming to visit you, where would you be taking them?
Well, the first place is where I had the pleasure of meeting and playing with you and Jill would be the home course. You have to go and see the home course and play that golf course. That would be one. I would almost say it's kind of a 1A, 1B. Obviously, Chambers Bay.
Sure.
Have to see the bay for guys that are and gals that can walk it. It's just an unbelievable golf course. Did you get to play it, Darren, when you were up here?
Oh yeah, I played Chambers a few times, but let's go back to the home course. Talk a little bit about what makes it special to you, because I know you have a love in your heart for it, and you know, just kind of tell the listeners, you know, why you think it's such a cool place.
Okay. So number one, I love a golf course when you're driving into it. And if you've never played it, you're wondering, what hole is this? And when you see the flag and you see the fairways, the mounding fairways, the links style that it has trees and a link style. So number one, the drive up is what I like. Golf course on each side of you. And then there's just the views you can see for miles, which I love. But once you get on the golf course, you'll be blocked out by a few trees. And then also it's just flat and it's wide open. But they have these sneaky mounds when you're looking and you're like, oh, I got to hit it over here off of this mound. If you hit it off of that mound, it kicks you into a sand trap or into a bunker, if you will. It just challenges you from hole to hole, and they're all different. Every hole is super and unique and different, but very playable, very forgiving. It's tough, yet forgiving, if that makes sense.
It makes total sense, and that's such a good description of it. I remember thinking that each hole really feels its own, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, the wide openness of it, you'll think that, again, you can see out for as far as you can see, but the holes make you feel like you're the only group on the golf course. So it's super cool. It's the way that it's laid out is perfect. You get some water views, obviously, again, which I love, and just the link style, yet it has a hint of what a Pacific Northwest golf course is. So I just love it, and I say it's number one. If anyone's coming into town, go visit the home course. And then my other one would be Trophy Lake over in the Gig Harbor, Port Orchard area.
Tell us a little bit more about that, because I don't know anything about Trophy Lake.
Okay, so Trophy Lake is called Trophy Lake and Casting. And I'll tell you, this is how special Trophy Lake is. I'm out there one day and I meet Kevin James out on that golf course. So wherever Kevin James came from, he ended up going to play Trophy Lake. So Trophy Lake has trout fishing.
Nice.
the traditional tree line. Elevation. It's just a wonderful, challenging golf course that will bite you in your butt. But you'll love every bit of it. But it's demanding tee shots. They have a couple, two drivable par fours, which are always nice to help the scorecard. Sure. Some reachable par fives. The distances are nice and enjoyable. You can lose a few golf balls if you get off the edges a little bit. But I just love the tree line. It gets you high above the trees. So you just have magnificent views. And again, another golf course where you just feel like you're the only group out there. So I recommend it highly. You got to get over and play Trophy Lake, Home Course, Chambered Bay, my top three. Those are the ones I like to play the most.
That is great. Now you have a fantastic regular group of friends you play with. You enjoy introducing new friends to courses. Mm-hmm. And now you've got AP National Golf Club. You know, why is it special to you and where do you see it going?
So AP National is tremendously special. Because it's one, I have a lot of friends that are, you know, hour and a half away. And it's hard to turn down your buddies when they want to play and you only have a tee time for one, you know, one group, what have you. So putting together AP National, putting together a tournament schedule, having 10 events in a calendar year, give or take, and then obviously some play in between has been a lot of fun. We celebrate each player with trophies at the end of our tournaments. We run a net series is what we do. So every player that has a clean handicap, I'd like to say. And mind you, clean is what we strive for. And it's.
No, you mean people actually don't have clean handicaps?
Well, Mitchie, you know that if you're not vetting some guys out there, playing with them, making sure they post their scores, you know, it's you got to make sure they're clean. Let's just make sure.
No,
clean.
I get it.
PR guys are.
I get it. Why do I sense a bogey chronicle? All right, we'll talk about that later.
So we play net, and so a guy that's a plus two versus and a guy that's a plus eight, they equally have a chance to win. And a lot of our tournaments are won by one shot. Just one stroke separates the winner from second place, which I love. And the guys and gals that participate in our events are extremely grateful. They're extremely excited. A lot of them can't sleep the night before tournament day. So we put on some compelling tournaments that excite people. And AP National is a golf club that's for everyone. Gals, guys, kids, we invite everyone to come out and play. Make sure you join, get your handicap, post your scores, and you can play in our events. And Darren, I see our golf club really reaching to other states. That's what AP National is. Short, it's Atlantic, Pacific, National. So, you know, East Coast, West Coast, and in between. And any of our members that unfortunately have to move or locate, we're going to be there to help them start their own club wherever they go so they can have golf friends and kind of continue what we do. And we will help facilitate that from our home base here in Seattle and help them wherever they're at. So we're hoping to see it grow and branch out and then obviously have national tournaments eventually. So that's where I see it going, buddy.
What a cool concept.
Isn't that great? I love the idea. This is so who you are, that you're thinking about people who move and golf as a connector, which all of us who play have experience. But what a great thing. What a great thing.
Thanks, buddy.
You're also an integral part of the team that's coordinating the Washington Golf Centennial Celebration. It's going to take place in 2022. Mm-hmm. Tell us what's up with that and what you're looking forward to. Obviously, a great celebration.
Yeah, well, I hope we're able to pull it off, obviously, in the current climate that we're in. But sitting on that board and being a part of such a great organization that cares about the community, golf, and obviously things other than golf, but the youth, the people, the tournaments that we help facilitate, from the volunteers to staff, there's a lot of great people that make that organization run. And it's been around, obviously, 1922, and the Centennial's next year. And I'd love for us, what we're working on, myself and the other strategic team members are, we want to have a centennial to celebrate all of what Washington Golf is and all the different areas of golf that we've gone through. And so not just Hickory, not just Moderns and Blades, and I hope I can maybe pull out my McGregor 3-iron and pull that out, but we want to have guys come out and dress in their favorite era of golf and have a great celebration down at the home course and just play some golf, talk, share, take a lot of pictures, share some stories, have a lot of laughs, and hopefully folks that haven't heard about the Washington Golf Association, WAGOLF, Golf, they'll be able to be introduced to them at that time. And we can continue a tradition of sharing golf throughout the years. So.
Well, nobody is in a better position to help with that than you are. That sounds great. I think, Darren, we're going to have to, in 2022, we're going to have to go out and celebrate WAGOLF. Golf.
Well, yeah.
I mean, hello.
We'd love to have you. Love to have you.
Well, we're going to get an early start in August when we, you know, hit Gamble Sand. So
I was just thinking, it seems like Darrell should be with us on that trip.
I think so.
I'll have to send you the information, Darrell, because you should definitely come over and visit with us at Gamble.
Yeah, I see. August, right? August to like September 1st, that time, right?
Yep. Those final 3 days of August plus we're going to go play Wine Valley on September 1st.
Yeah, I love Gamble Sands. Gamble Sands is such a treat, buddy. I love it.
All right. Well, I hereby make a promise that if you join us, I will be wearing the plus fours, and maybe I'll even wear the kilt again. Have you worn a kilt when you play yet, Darrell?
That's the one fashion place I haven't hit yet.
Forget the plus fours. Okay. I mean, I love them, but Well, I'll talk to you about I'll talk to you about it.
Okay.
Because it'll change your golfing life. I would wear them here in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. I'd wear a kilt when I play, but then I would probably have to move to Washington State. So.
Hey,
all right.
We would gladly accept you, but
all right, good. I'll tell my wife when we're done.
You tell Ava. There we go.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about, because I know it's such an important part of your life, as it is for Darren and I also. Okay. But your history with Hickory's, talk about them, why 2013 was so important for you. And again, as I said earlier in the podcast, not just as a kind of a date, but as a kind of a real part of who you are and what it made you realize looking back as 2013 was the centennial of the 1913 events that happened in the world of golf. Tell us all about that.
It just seems like a lifetime ago. So 13 was the year that AP National was established. I was looking for a different tournament, a fun tournament for our members to participate in just to end the year. And vintage is what came up through my thinking and preparing. And you've probably heard me say before that I'm not a big jeans guy or a t-shirt guy on the golf course. I've relaxed a little bit. But I wanted to see our guys dress up is what I wanted to see. And I wanted guys to play old clubs. So in 13, I came up with, hey, let's do an old vintage tournament. And through my research, I learned about Hickory. I also learned about, really dove into history of USGA and other players that have played in early era, played with Hickory, obviously Bobby Jones I knew about, but I discovered John Shippen at that time. Mm-hmm. And John Shippen really stood out to me, knowing for me being a black or African-American player, that stood out to me tremendously, that particular gentleman, John Shippen, played in a U.S. Open in 1896. That's pretty powerful to me. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know it. I mean, it's there. It's in the history books, but I just didn't know it. I really didn't see any images at the time. But I started doing my research, and I read about him and other golfers. And I'm like, this is going to be a kick in the pants to do this. And it really, obviously 1913 and thinking 2013, I started making these little connections and greatest game ever played with Francis We Met and Eddie Lowry and in that field. Again, Mr. Shippen, he was in that field in 1913. Pretty historic to me. It's pretty special time. But Hickory, I played Hickory in that tournament. And a few of my other guys played. And I'm telling you, it was just like hitting that McGregor 3-iron. I was hooked. Just the feel of those shafts playing. Like I always say with Hickory, it's like you own the shot. There's zero technology in those things. So your tempo has to be good. Your strike has to be precise or that you're going to embarrass yourself quite quickly.
Yeah.
As you know. And so it just brought a lot of joy to me. And to me, it was just the connection. It was a connection to the game. I had a Hickory club that pretty much traveled from Scotland or somewhere else. I had it in my hand and I was playing it. So I wanted to do more of that. I made a deep dive into it, and I just wanted to share it with anyone that would listen to me. And it really hasn't stopped. I want more people to learn about it. I want more people to play it. I'm glad to know you're out there, Mitch playing, Darren's playing. I hope Chris gets out and plays, and more people play it. It's just an enjoyable way to play play golf, I should say. It's just an enjoyable way to play.
And excuse me, Brian Orr, golf course photographer extraordinaire,
drink
plays also with the yeah. And we're about to get Eric Hart, our fabulous writer, he's about to take. Don't you think, Darren?
Eric's about
to take the plunge.
Full-time. Eric just needs a set of clubs, and he'll do it full time.
So, all right,
Billy, how much?
Did you say Billy?
I know. I call him Billy. He's Billy Bogey.
That's it.
All right. Go ahead.
How many Hickories do you own?
Oh, buddy, don't put me on the spot like that. So last count, I have seven sets.
Nice.
So I want to say last count was over 200 sticks for sure.
Nice.
But again, that's to put sets together to bring a bag for a buddy or two that wants to play. And so that's just what you do. You just start collecting them and just getting them ready for other folks. And next thing you know, boom, you have a small museum in your garage.
All right. I'm going to ask you a question because I know Darren is this way too. When we trap, we always play with our Hickories wherever
okay.
we
go. Okay.
What I find almost always with probably I can count on both hands the number of times I've played with somebody, a regular golfer, either paired up or even somebody that I know that I play with, who says, let me hit that. Oh, people sure. are scared. They are afraid for whatever their reason. The first excuse, obviously, is I'm going to break it. And the other one just is this kind of, they look at them. I'm sitting in my office right now at home looking at the Hickories leaned up against the wall, and I'm looking at them and I'm always amazed as a golfer, because the first time I played with somebody who was a Hickory, you know, hit Hickories, I couldn't wait to hit one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I couldn't wait. To me, it was unbelievable. It would be like if you're a tennis player and somebody said, here's a tennis racket that they used 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I would want to hit it.
Absolutely.
Okay. So when you, those seven sets or however many you have,
mm-hmm.
other than events where you set it up, do mm-hmm. you find that your friends, the people that you regularly play with, do they hit them? Do they want to hit them?
They are terrified to hit them.
So they look at you the way other people look at me, in other words. They think you're an alien and they don't quite get what you're doing here.
Yeah, I'm basically like, you know, I'm basically Frankenstein.
Okay.
So, yeah, there's just a, they won't do it. And then the other, they're scared to death that they're going to break it. So they don't want to do that. As soon as you say it's 100 years old, they don't want to touch it. They want to feel it, but they don't want to hit it. And then once you start hitting it and you hit it pretty good, they really don't want to hit it then, because they're going to want the same they expect the same thing when they go mm-hmm. to hit. So they don't want to touch it. And quite frankly, I get it, but it's like, you just don't know what you're missing. You really don't. Don't miss this opportunity. And golf is such, you know, don't miss the opportunities to connect to something super special. And I encourage guys, I always say, hey, I'll give them the heaviest. I'll give them a Niblick or something they can really have some success with. Mm-hmm. If the ones that finally do try it, but I rarely get anyone that hits it on a golf course. It's very rare.
See, and on the flip side, the first time I ever played with somebody who was playing hickories was Mitch. and we were playing at, I think it was Pinehurst number 5. And, you know, we were probably halfway through the round, Mitch, when I was like, okay, it's time. I need to hit one of those.
Yep. Mm.
You know, that's what started the whole thing for me. And so it's.
But Darren was very secretive, Darrell.
Was he?
Yeah, he hit him, mm-hmm. and then didn't really say a whole lot, and didn't jump up and down and go, okay, Nirvana, I can die now. He went back to California and didn't really talk about it at all. And Darren, would you get one club and just went out and played with it?
Yeah, I had a club that my wife had bought at an antique shop. She was going to, like, you know, use something for it for a display. And it turned out when I started looking at it, it was a Stewart long iron.
Wow.
And I went outside and batted her around with 3 golf balls in my front yard and decided I wanted to go to the golf course. And, you know, I've told that story before on the podcast, but I went to the golf course with just that club and 3 balls and hit it down into the middle of the fairway, hit it up to the front edge of the green, didn't have a putter. So I chipped it from just off the green and chipped it in the hole for birdie, and the rest was history.
Wow. So,
and he's never accomplished that since. I just want to let you know.
Right. That has never happened again.
It's all been downhill from there.
And then I think I called Mitch in the middle of that round while I was doing it. And I think I played 18 holes with just that club that day. And I'm pretty sure, seems like I shot 108. But I hit it out of bunkers, and I hit, you know, I hit runners, I hit all kinds of stuff, and then I knew I was hooked.
Well, one question, Darren, about that. Did you change your swing when you were hitting that one iron? Did anything change, or was it the same swing?
No, I had to re-engineer my swing for the hickories because I was a big draw player and I couldn't hit the hickories with the same kind of draw.
Sure.
So I kind of went to a reverse C to make sure that I was just getting the ball in the air all the time. And then I kind of straightened it out from there. So nowadays I can try to hit a draw because I've played for so long with them. But for the most part, I'm hitting a soft fade all the time with the golf clubs. And it's funny, I think back sometimes. And sometimes I'll put a modern club, you know, modern driver in my hand and then try to hit a big ropey hook and see how far I can hit it. But I never try that with the hickories. I'd rather be consistent, hit a soft little fade, and just be in the fairway all day. And, you know, but there's such a novelty to them. You know, even the people who don't want to play them. Mitch, I haven't told you this, that, you know, I mentioned I was abandoned on Thursday playing in some horrendous weather. And on Sheep Ranch that evening, somebody had one of the caddies, not in my group, had put up a picture of the terrible weather. And Eric Hart, our friend, had commented on it. And I looked at the video. And so I messaged the guy and I said, hey, were you the guys in the group behind me? And the guy then emailed me a video he had shot that I didn't know of me teeing off on the 7th, I mean, the 17th at Sheep Ranch with the hickories. So
he was thinking, not only is this weather horrendous,
yeah,
but here's a guy who's playing 100-year-old clubs in horrendous weather.
Yeah, and I had literally just—I remember the shot. He shot a video of the second, my second tee shot on the 17th because I hooked the first one into the ocean, you know, and those guys came walking through the path. And I said, sorry, guys, I'm slapping it around a little bit right here. Sorry to make you wait. And I teed one up, hit another one. And yeah, he shot a video of it. And I never would have known if I hadn't seen that video. So or seen the video on about the weather on Twitter. So anyway, it's just,
isn't that great?
People are watching you with them, even when you don't realize you're being watched. And that's 100%. Part of what I love about it, that whole conversation that you have with people and that people just really gravitate toward it. You get the occasional person who's like, well, the game's hard enough. Why do you want to make it harder? But, for me, the joy of hitting golf shots overcame that a long time ago.
100%. 100%. Couldn't agree more.
All right. I'm going to drag Chris. Chris, you there? Are you awake? Chris?
I am, yeah.
Okay. What's up? I just want to ask you a question since we had kind of mentioned you. Have you ever played hickories?
No, I haven't, but I'm dying to.
Do you have any? Okay. I was going to ask you I know you've heard Darren and I talk about it, but just as a golfer, you have a desire to find out what they're about?
Oh, for sure. Okay. I'm super into the idea, like you were saying, like the old, tennis racket or the old golf club, or even, I remember picking up an old just wooden bat back in my baseball playing days and seeing what that was all about, or in an old baseball glove, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
I feel old. An old wooden bat. Oh my God.
I do have a set of kind of old clubs. They're a set of Tommy Armors, but they're not hickories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But those are, I think, and what Darrell and I mean, the other day, I won't go into this, but I have, older clubs from the 60s. And I go out and I'll hit Ben Hogan. I have, Persimmons, Tony Pennisimmons. And I think what Darrell's getting at and makes total sense to me is the more we realize it's not about shooting a score unless you're a professional or competing in a handicap event or a stroke play event, the more it's about the incredible opportunity we have to play a game with all manner of tools. Mm-hmm. It's mind-boggling to me. It's completely amazing. I mean, you can't play basketball and somebody give you a ball from when Naismith put a peach basket up. You can't. They can try, but probably it'd be deflated.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. I mean, you can't. It's just mind-boggling to me that we can go out and play with people who are playing modern clubs, play the same golf course, and hit the hit shots and score. All right, we can talk about this for hours.
Yeah, that's why it's the ultimate game, baby. That is it. You could play with the equipment is still relevant. It's just all about the player and what they're doing. But it really comes down to the enjoyment. Driving an old Model T or what have you, it's just beautiful. Those clubs, you could just play anytime, anywhere, and enjoy it. Period.
Amen.
Yep.
All right, let's move on, because like I said, we could talk about this for hours. Let's just talk before we're going to get to an abbreviated emergency nine with you, Darrell.
Okay.
Because we want to, basically, and it's our podcast. Yes.
Okay.
I do want to talk about your social media stuff, though, because obviously there's millions of people on social media. But for people that haven't followed you, that may go and follow you for the first time, for those of us who've been aware and how we met following you, it's an incredible platform for someone like you, because to really stand out, you have to be creative. You have to be kind of unique, not chasing it just for the sake of being unique, but because the reality of who you are kind of shines through after a while. That's the people that I want to be having my day every day are those people. Your social media stuff, everything from your Instagram stuff, everything from still frames, positive message images with quotes, fun videos that you do, creations. And then, as I mentioned at the top, one of my absolute favorite things that you do, the Bogey Chronicles. This seems like a perfect format for somebody like you. You can incorporate a lot of things. You can do a lot of things, and you can get out a message that's very clearly important to you. So just talk briefly about how the social media stuff has impacted your connections, your reach. And then I just want to ask you a question about the Bogey Chronicle.
Sure, sure. Well, it's a really great question and kind of and point. And thank you for noticing what my social media is. And, you know, the positive quotes and different things I put out there, I figure, you know, the negative stuff, you know, people, the market's cornered on that. So I'm good there. Right. So I try to stay on the positive side and share what's near and dear to me, which is just golf and just having fun. And obviously connecting with good people like Darren, yourself and Chris and other positive people that are out there, and you really get to see personalities after a while. I love social media when it's used the right way. And there's no way I believe in this world I would have met you or Darren, obviously, or Chris, if it wasn't for social media. I wouldn't. I would only see you maybe on an episode of Matlock, Mitch.
Matlock reference.
But I wouldn't know. I wouldn't have known it was you. So if you know what I mean. And yeah. So
it could have been his brother.
Well, right. It could have been Matt, right?
So thanks, Darren.
So I love social media for the connection, the information and sharing and getting stories out there. And the Bogey Chronicles for me is definitely just stories and things. I never want to throw anyone under the bus, but I just like to shine light on things that may irk me a little bit here and there and other golfers. And so I just like to have fun with it. Just small clips. I'm maybe 17 episodes in. I'm still growing. I can get a little long-winded sometimes. And I got to tighten that stuff up. I can learn a little bit from you and Darren on how to be more of a professional when it comes to this kind of stuff.
Oh, I'm worried now. Let's, for people who haven't seen it, I wish we could just visually play one, because it's not just the what you're saying, it's how you do it. There's music behind him. I find the music one of the great things about it. The messages are obviously great. Your latest one was "Don't Be a Gimme Jimmy," which Darren, I sent to you, and I know moved you to tears.
It's one of the favorite things I've seen in a long time.
When I say I laughed, I cried. "Don't Be a Gimme Jimmy" is one of those things. But there's always music. Excuse me. There's always music behind it, which gives it a little bit of a kind of esoteric quality to the message that you're trying to get across. How did the Bogey Chronicles come? Did you just one day say, I got to talk about this? I got to actually say some things about how I feel.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. It was like, you know, I have to say something about this and put some things out there. And it was basic. I mean, I guess I'm using it as my therapy, just to share. And so that's it. I have a ton of stories. They just like you and Darren and Chris probably have. You're traveling the world playing golf. You see some things. You meet some great people. But there's also some etiquette issues that are out there, and you just want to share it. And I got a couple of friends, you know, a few of them. They're not geniuses, you know. So, NASA's not calling any of these guys anytime soon. I'll tell you right now. So this was kind of a gentle way of saying, "Hey, cut that crap out." So, you know, I'll get a little heat. I'll accept it. That's kind of what happens when you put yourself out there. But the Bogey Chronicles are really just. They are chronicles of bogeys. This is a damn bogey. Don't do this. Okay.
When your friends watch them, do they call you on it?
Oh my gosh.
Do they come in and say, "Were you talking about me? Because if you were, man, I'm."
Look, okay. That's a great question. So actually, so we're playing on Saturday. There's some foolishness going on the golf course. And one of my buddies goes, oh, man, I know this is going to be a future chronicle. So that's happening, or I'll get a message. Hey, thanks for putting out that video. I think I was doing it right. But if I wasn't, I will be now. Thanks for putting that out. So there's some things that are happening. It's just fun. That's what the music is about. Just to say, hey, this is all about fun. That's it. It's all about fun. It's a serious message, but it's a little tongue in cheek. Let's have some fun. Don't be so serious when you're out there, but just try and play by the rules and be respectful when you're out there. And that's really what it's about. And I think there's just too many guys trying to be tour posers out there. And there's just too many tour posers.
Yeah.
Just pump the brakes a little bit, but keep your pace, take care of the golf course, and don't be a knucklehead to your playing partners when you're playing horribly. Just be kind out there. So that's it, buddy.
Gimme, Jimmy is such a great phrase. We mentioned Joe, who you've played golf with, Durrell, and
yeah.
He uses the phrase Johnny all the time. And so I've been called Johnny Milkshake, Johnny Root Beer. He calls people Johnny Three Putt when they're putting bad. But Gimme Jimmy is one of those things that made me think about it too. So he's got to hear about that. He called Brian Orr is notorious for no gimmies. His grandma taught him to play, and there were no gimmies in their house. So he puts everything out. When we play together, he puts everything out. Mm-hmm. And we were at, I think it was Abandoned Dunes, and Joe was with us, and Brian uncharacteristically raked one from a couple of feet after he missed a putt. And Joe just jumped all over him and was like, oh, all of a sudden you're Johnny Gimme. Oh. Now, if we had Jimmy Gimme, I mean, that would be, or Gimme Jimmy, that would be perfect. So there's everything I like about that. I literally just looked up on Instagram to see if somebody had stolen Jimmy Gimme, Gimme Jimmy. God, I can't say it.
I have a merch idea.
Wait, well, it needs to be on a t-shirt right now. Absolutely.
Well, t-shirt would be great. But just for my own home office, well, I want a bobblehead doll of Billy Bogey, and I will create a shrine in my home office that I can have sitting up that I look at every day. I'm just saying. Because this is a great idea. Because people are, as you said, there's plenty of negativity online. Mm-hmm. Why not have Billy Bogey be the voice of reason?
Yep.
It's fun. You get the message across. It makes people think and go, wait, am I doing that? Maybe that isn't right. It's literally the perfect way to get the message across. And you, my friend, are Mahatma Gandhi, as far as I'm concerned.
Hey, easy.
Yeah, buddy. No, I know, but I have taken you to a whole different level now.
Well, you already said bobblehead. So, I mean, I won't be able to get out of the door now.
Yeah,
I mean,
no, that's true.
Jarrell is the
that's true.
The bogey, well, the bogey Buddha.
There you go. Bogey Buddha. I get it.
Hey, now we're talking.
Well, you know, my wife, there's a bobblehead for my wife. So I have to deal with the bobblehead thing all the time. She'll just walk in when I say something stupid and hold up the bobblehead. That's her answer. I go, okay, you win. There's no comeback.
Absolutely. Well, when the t-shirts come, you get the first editions,
and I'll be the first to wear it.
I'm literally having a conversation with a t-shirt guy later today. I'm gonna don't be a Gimme Jimmy is gonna be a t-shirt I'm getting made. Sorry. It's going to happen. All right. We've been chatting for an hour. We need to dive into a speed round of the Emergency Nine. For those of you out there who don't know what the Emergency Nine is, it's kind of the top questions that Mitch and I and the rest of us golf travelers get all the time. We like to ask them of various guests, and we haven't done one of these in a while in full. So if we can speed round it, we're going to try to ask them all. And we're going to start off with favorite course and or destination anywhere in the world.
Favorite course anywhere in the world. Right now, top, real top, I'd say Marion Golf Club.
Nice. You made a trip out there a couple of years ago, right?
I did. It's 16, 17. Yeah.
Why do you love it?
What was that, Darren?
Why do you love it?
Oh, obviously the history, number one. And just to think, you know, Bobby Jones and the rest of the players that have walked those grounds, the historic nature of what Marion represents. It's just unbelievable.
Cool.
It's just an unbelievable place.
That's a pretty good one.
Yep.
I got to say, that's a pretty good one. You think about this, Darrell. You mm-hmm. going from Pacific Lutheran nine-holer,
mm-hmm.
that's now a parking lot,
mm-hmm.
to Marion.
Buddy, I'm not on the irony of that. Trust me.
I know you are.
See, that's Hickory, that's golf, that's the journey, and it just lets you know just, again, how special this game is and where it takes you and the people you meet, the places you go, and it was super special, that place.
Cool. All right. Next question. What destination is at the top of your golf travel bucket list?
Oh, Scotland. Well, I need to see Prestwick and St. Andrews. I haven't done that.
Okay.
What?
Yeah, I haven't done that yet. Easy, DB. Easy. Easy. Yeah.
Boy, I should forward you. Eric Hart is working on an itinerary, a Scotland itinerary that'll blow people's minds, that he wants a post-pandemic visit that he wants he and I to take. And it's got Prestwick on it. It's got all kinds of good stuff on it. And there's so much in Scotland to explore. It just, every time we look at it, I think to myself, it just needs 12, 15 different trips to do Scotland and Ireland correctly.
So. That's what it sounds like. That's what what it sounds like. So, but Prestwick's really top of the list, and St. Andrews.
Where's the best place you have ever stayed? It could be on a golf trip, could be on any other travel.
Sticking with golf, the best place I've stayed really for me is close to home. It's Bandon in those nice little lily pod rooms.
Nice.
I just love being there and being on that property.
Yeah, the Lily Pond is great. I think I've stayed in all the lodging now at Bandon, and just went when I was there over the summer, stayed in the Lily Ponds again, and they're really well designed, and everything there is just kind of so clean and well thought out, especially when you consider that those were built, you know, really early on in the process.
100%. It's just it's a little golf town. It's like just going to a little village. It's just a little golf village to me, and I love it. I love it there.
Yep.
All right, I'm going to ask you the next question, even though Darren is always, this is the one he usually wants to ask because he is Mr. Food. What's the single best thing you've ever eaten on a trip? Where was it?
Single best thing. Buddy, I'm gonna say it's more of a liquid combination.
That's fine.
So I've had one of, well, this would be near and dear as well. Chambers Bay, they I don't know if they still do it now, but they make this killer Bloody Mary that weighs about 2 pounds with all the salmon and bacon and stuff that's all on it. So my quest in life is to find the best Bloody Mary. So wherever I go, I got to have their Bloody Ooh. Mary. Yeah.
Oh, this is good info to know.
Yeah, that's a quality quest.
That's, yeah.
I love a good Bloody Mary. So there you go.
All right. What's, we all concede that the golf and the people you're with are the two most important things when you travel for golf. What's number three? What's the most important thing to you besides that on a golf trip?
Well, obviously one will be my clubs arriving safely and the weather has to just ideal. But if I'm not walking off of that golf course, and once I get home, or back to the hotel, what have you, if my phone isn't almost dead from taking pictures and videos, it was a disappointment.
Good point. Do you use one of the shipping services for your golf clubs?
When I travel with my Hickories, I'm going to give up a trade secret here. for me, but I, when I travel with my hickories, I put them, I don't use a shipping company, no, Darren. So what I end up doing is I put my hickories with my pencil bag in an old driver box.
Okay.
Because all of my clubs in my pencil bag can fit in there.
Okay.
And I tape it up, I write fragile on it, and then I check it. I take it on and I check it in the front of the plane.
Wow. So you like literally put it in the overhead compartment.
Well, they kind put it in the forward of the aircraft for me.
Right.
And I just, you know, down there where the baby strollers and stuff are, the precious things.
Interesting. I've never even thought about that. I mean, I have a hard case, a SKG, SKB, I never can remember the letters, but that has done very well for me. Brian has one as well. And we've used luggage forward a lot. And that, you know, to get them around the country. Usually I
and
will.
They've been good. They've been good.
Yeah. Usually I will ship my clubs to the destination to make sure that they don't get lost on the plane when I'm going somewhere.
Sure.
But if I'm coming home, I don't always ship them home. Sometimes I just take them with me and check them and check luggage because the cases have been really good. I used to have, you know, when I had like a club glove, I would do kind of what you talked about. I'd put them all together and then I would actually take the cellophane wrap and wrap them all together so that they were, you know, stronger together than not and do all those things. But once I went to the hard case, it helped a lot.
That's good to know.
But I love your little hidden secret there. That I might have to try that.
Yeah, it's peace of mind for me. So knock on wood.
It's gone. Knock on hickory.
For all of us.
Knock on hickory, right?
All right, let's move on. What's the one piece of golf apparel or equipment that you can't live without?
Ooh, well, I love navy blue, so I have to have navy blue shorts in warm weather.
Really?
Yeah, I think I have like 7 pair of navy blue shorts. I love navy blue shorts for some reason.
Any idea where that particular piece of psychological weirdness comes from?
Well, I mean, you know, maybe I was adopted, dropped on my head. I don't know.
All right. Again, good to know for those of us looking to gift you with something sometime.
Yeah.
I would go out and buy you a pair of, you know, tan shorts and I'd be out of luck.
I don't even own any khaki shorts.
Make sure when you get him a kilt, it's navy blue, Mitch.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, so that, and I would say my 60-degree wedge, if I'm playing moderns, I have to have my 60-degree wedge. That is my go-to club. But hickory-wise, oh, my gosh, if my niblick was in trouble, oh, man, it's a short game. The short game is everything. You got to have a good club to get up and down around the greens.
Yep, definitely. Yeah. Okay, how good of a player are you? What's your handicap, and what tees yardage do you play from? Do you try to dial it into something with the hickories and with the moderns, or do you play all over the place? You know, anywhere from 5,000 to 7,000.
Sure. Well, 5,000 to about 64, 65 is max.
Okay.
Hickory, obviously, I like to stay around that 5.
So you're playing, when you're playing hickories, you're playing short.
Oh yeah. Cool. When I play some of the guys, I may play the whites. I'll play the normal distances and mess with their egos a little bit.
Sure.
But when it's playing the right way, not putting any stress on the hickories and just really enjoying it, I play around 5. Cool. I like to enjoy my round. Handicap wise, it's, my goodness, I think I'm a 6 now on the elevator up. so it's not pretty.
Nice.
I think I just shot 94 in our last tournament, which was horrible. I mean, I don't know if there were golf course scores or the temperature in Arizona in the summer. It was pretty bad.
It's all right. It was just the express elevator.
Exactly. I'm the reverse guy. I do not like having a high handicap. My hickory handicap is a 8 and my modern handicap is a 6.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Now this is a tough question that we ask people.
Okay.
the most interesting person you've ever golfed with? Is there someone that stands out? We all know that we have many people mm-hmm. that we love playing with. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Was there one that just kind of really grabbed you? Maybe it was a kind of a life-changing experience to play with somebody, or somebody that became a great friend?
Okay. Well, outside of Darren, right? Excluding Darren?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm the top answer on a lot of people's emergency nines.
See, what's weird is that's the disqualifying answer to me. I don't know.
Easy, Mitchie. Easy.
All right. Sorry.
Oh, so I would say here are my two. I have two. Okay.
Yep.
One would be Deal Hudson. You know Deal, Mitch.
Oh, Deal.
Deal Hudson.
Yep.
And interesting person, interesting man. And I would say my other would be the legend Bill Russell.
The basketball legend?
The basketball legend Bill Russell, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's bigger than life. Playing golf with him a couple times was one of the most interesting special rounds in my life.
His clubs have to be as tall as you are, don't they?
They were pretty lengthy, my friend.
Huge.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. So that was interesting. That was fun. And seeing him playing left-handed, it's pretty cool. It was pretty cool.
That's outstanding. Who is Deal Hudson?
Go ahead, Daryl.
Oh, Deal Hudson, a Hickory player out of, I believe, of the Virginia area.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, the avid Hickory player, just one hell of a gentleman, and just stylish. I mean, I think he goes to his pajamas are stylish. I mean, the guy just oozes class day in and day out. Super dude.
I have to just add a note. This will just be to say that I agree with you, because I got to play with Russell a lot with Bill. Mm. Mm-hmm. Over the years. Uh-huh. And there was nobody, not only that playing golf with him was, as you said, unbelievable, but to be able to spend some time with him off mm-hmm. the golf course mm-hmm. and actually have conversation with him mm-hmm. is still completely mind-boggling to me. I just saw a post that he put up yesterday or this morning, because Elgin Baylor died.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I saw that yesterday, unfortunately.
Yeah, and he put something, a really great post up about his friendship with Elgin Baylor and stuff. He's just one of the, I wish everybody could get to experience some time with Bill Russell, because it would literally change the way you look at the world.
Yeah, he's a super kind man, bigger than life.
Yeah. And funny as all get out.
Oh, he's a riot. I can't even say what we talked about.
I know. But his laugh. That's
interesting.
His laugh was as big as he was.
Oh, my gosh.
I can still hear it.
Yeah, you can hear him three fairways over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That
super dude.
Right.
Okay. Super dude.
Tell us your best golf course story. What's the coolest, weirdest, craziest thing you've ever seen or done on a golf course?
Ooh. Okay. I think I have two. So one, not funny, but I've seen these guys on a golf cart go up a big hill, one guy, to go get his golf ball, and he decided to turn around and come down that same hill, not at an angle. He was probably doing 30, maybe 40 in this golf cart, tried to turn it at the bottom of the hill, flipped it. I just watched it all happen right in front of me. His buddies run up, flip the cart over, with him still holding on to the steering wheel, just in shock, they push him to the passenger side, pick up all the stuff, and continue driving and playing. That was on the 10th hole. I never saw that guy get out of the golf cart again for the rest of the round.
Oh, my goodness.
So I don't know if it was a weekend at Bernie's. They just tied him into the golf seat and left him there, or he was just in shock and he wasn't budging. I don't know.
That's crazy.
So, you know how guys are. It might be their only round. They don't want to ruin it by one of their knucklehead buddies tipping too many, right? So they're going to finish by all means necessary. The other one was a story. I had a friend that liked to throw his golf clubs whenever he hit a bad shot. And we were paired with a guy, I'm going to say he was probably, you know, in his late 70s, early 80s, just hitting the ball really good. And my buddy just took his club and he just kind of flipped it forward into the ground and it started bouncing. And the elderly gentleman walked up to him and he's pulling his pull card and he puts his hand on my buddy's shoulder and he goes, "You know, son, you really shouldn't throw your clubs like that." And my buddy goes, "Oh, I know, I know. I'm sorry. I'm just so frustrated. I'm just having a tough time." And the gentleman said to him, "If you're going to throw your club, you need to throw it helicopter style so it just goes out in front of you so it doesn't bounce back and hit you in the face." It was just the best. And he just demonstrated how to throw the club. It was just awesome. And we laughed for the rest of the round. It was awesome. So
us old guys know things.
Oh, that is good stuff. Okay, we've got two kind of bonus questions since this is an emergency nine, but really it's an emergency 11.
Okay.
We want to know what makes a round of golf fun for you, and we want to know what makes a golf course great for you.
Well, I have to reiterate my phone. If my battery is almost dead or dead, and the amount of pictures that I have at the end, because I just want to capture the beauty that's on the golf course. And again, it's that water. It could be special tee boxes or tee markers the golf course has made specially for a particular golf course. It could be memorial plaques. I love to see just certain things for its members, its history. So I love to take a lot of pictures and capture the moments. And I need the water. I need the animals. Obviously, the greens, those are a big deal. You love the greens to be as true as possible, considering when you play it, what time of year. And good yardage markers is a good thing for me. I love good yardage markers. I like unique ones when they use boulders and natural things as yardage markers around golf courses. But it's really... Again, how I know it's a good golf course is based on the amount of pictures I take at the end. And that's really, I think golf courses are unique to individuals. It just depends on how that course makes you feel while you're out there and once you leave.
Great point.
Cool.
Yeah, really good point.
Did I get them all there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Okay.
All right. We have covered a lot of ground, a ton of ground, as we should. As you are worthy of covering, my friend. We'll do this again. We're going to keep up with you as you go with all your great events, with WA Golf, with AP National Golf Club. There's just so much. And again, anybody that wants to follow along, at Billy Bogey on Instagram, Billy Bogey on Facebook, get in there and mix it up interactively with the Bogey Chronicles. Again, you'll be glad you did. It's become for me, Darrell, it's become a staple of my Instagram life.
And that's kind of you, buddy. I appreciate that. You just never know how that stuff's going to come out. Sometimes I'll toss and turn on a Bogey Crown. I'm like, oh, that's not very good. That's not funny. But it's the message that I want to get out.
Yeah.
And it's that's kind of you to say. And you've seen a lot out there. So I really appreciate that. I don't take that lightly. So I appreciate it.
Well, we thank Darrell, and we have to thank the listeners as well. We couldn't do it without them. Don't forget to subscribe or rate us on iTunes. Hit us on the socials at Golf Trip Experts with your questions, comments, pretty much anything you want to say or talk about when it comes to the world of golf travel. Also, don't forget to hit us up about details for French Lick and for Gamble Sands. And boy, we'll keep doing this, and hopefully we will get the great Billy Bogey on one of our trips.
I love it. Thank you. Thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate this. This was a lot of fun. You made it easy. You're true professionals, and I'm honored to be on your show. So thank you so much.
Thanks, man. We're beyond glad that you could join us today. Really, really appreciate it. And what's great about Darrell, Darren, is that we can get two. We can get Darrell Billy and we can get Billy Bogey. It's right. Like having alter egos. You could get what you think is one guy on a golf trip, and then all of a sudden you've got two.
We could fill up the entire trip with just various versions of
it's an interesting
Darrell,
well,
Billy,
between
Bogey.
Well, between Darrell Billy Bogey and Mitch and Matt Lawrence.
Good point.
You've got to force them.
That's oh my
as
God.
I can tell.
All
right. Thanks again, man. And thanks to Darren, as always. And Chris, we love you, man. We're glad you're here. Thanks for backing us up and being in the background.
You know you don't have to yell louder for him to hear you.
Chris.
He's just on the other side of the mic.
Chris.
Mitch and I communicate verbally from South Carolina to Chicago.
That's it. always have, always will. All right, thanks to both of you. You know, Darrell dreams of great things every day. He makes them happen for his family, his friends, for himself. Dream some dreams as you go through your days. We hope you can run them down. Thanks for being with us. So long. I'm running.